Welcome to The Lead, the exclusive news magazine in Northeast Texas, here on your station, 88.9 KETR. Good morning, I'm your host, Scott Harvey. This week, we relive the incredibly tragic, life-changing, yet inspiring story of the deadly tornado that hit Paris in 1982, which turned 30 years old this week.
The wind started sucking out around the edges, and my ears popped, and they popped, and they popped, and then everything went quiet. But during that time, you could hear a lot of prayers in a lot of different forms.
And the progress of a local organization working to construct a pedestrian trail across the region.
We love the trail. It's absolutely awesome. We walk roughly 5 or 6 miles on it every day.
Those topics are coming up after we check out the week's headlines. This is The Lead on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Public radio programs attract educated consumers and business decision makers. You can reach this highly desirable audience with your company's marketing message on KETR. It might be time to make our listeners your customers. Find out how by calling 903-513-9684. Ask for Sherry Gardner.
Welcome back to The Lead. It's now time to check out the news making headlines this week throughout Northeast Texas. Meteorologists say the tornado that ripped through Royce City and the Hunt County community of Union Valley was an EF2 with wind speeds reaching as high as 135 miles per hour, destroying several homes. As of Friday, officials had confirmed 14 tornadoes. The hardest hit area was Forney in Kaufman County. A number of EF0s also took place near Greenville, Cumbie, and Sulphur Springs. Governor Rick Perry has issued a disaster declaration for Dallas, Tarrant, and Kaufman counties due to damage from Tuesday's tornadoes. Perry says preliminary assessments from the American Red Cross indicate that nearly 650 structures were affected, with 200 destroyed. The city of Greenville has conducted tests on all 7 emergency sirens after dozens of citizens said they didn't hear them during Tuesday's storms. According to the city, each siren is working properly. There are 2 located at L3, while the remaining 5 are at the city parks. Delta County officials are pleased with the emergency response of its staff and citizens. As many as 160 people took shelter in the courthouse basement during Tuesday's storms. Emergency Management Coordinator Jack Kiley says he's working to provide an email/text emergency alert system to citizens. 52-year-old Thomas Taunton has been indicted on 3 counts of capital murder in the January deaths of 3 family members. Taunton was captured in Louisiana, and the bodies of his father, mother, and sister found in Grayson County a few days after they disappeared from their Leonard residence. Authorities have identified 85-year-old Ora Mae Barr of Bonham as the victim in this week's 2-vehicle accident in Bells. Barr was a passenger in a van driven by her husband when it struck a semi-truck at the intersection of Highway 56 and 69. Doug Barr remained in critical condition upon last check. A judge has denied a motion for a summary judgment concerning a countersuit filed by West Tawakoni Councilmember Carol Solomon against Mayor Pete Yoho. Trial in the more than 2-year-old case will proceed in May. The dispute originated when Yoho sought Solomon's removal from office, citing allegations of misconduct. 2 Trenton police officers are okay after their vehicles collided with another while responding to a call over the weekend. The 2 vehicles were following each other along FM 272, and when the officer in front stopped to make a turn, the second officer went around to try to avoid a collision, but clipped his rear bumper, sending both cars into the ditch. DNA testing is approved on strands of hair found in the hand of a murder victim in Hunt County. Brandon Dale Woodruff is currently serving a life prison term for the 2005 killings of his parents. Blonde hair was found in the hand of his mother. Brandon dyed his hair black on the day of the killings. Waylon Duffy Jr. has received a 10-year probation term as part of a plea deal for 2 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. A second suspect has pleaded not guilty and awaits trial, while another man had pleaded guilty and sentenced to 15 years in prison. Michael Lamb has been named the lone finalist to become the next superintendent at Sulphur Springs ISD. Lamb worked in central administration at Forney ISD since 2008. He was one of dozens of applicants seeking the vacancy left by retiring superintendent Patsy Bolton. The North Texas Municipal Water District says water levels have improved enough to allow customers to water their lawns once every week, as opposed to every other week. Roughly 1.6 million people in eight area counties are serviced by the district, including portions of Hunt, Raines, and Hopkins counties. The new requirements went into effect this week. And a lengthy closure of Greenville's Grand Park also began this week as crews begin work on the $1 million renovation. An official groundbreaking was held Friday. New features will include fountains, a fishing pier, a nine-hole disc golf course, a walking trail, a dog park, and splash pad. And that's a check of some of the news-making headlines this week throughout Northeast Texas. You can find more information on these stories and much more by visiting our website, ketr.org. Coming up next, a conversation with Kyle and Bob McCarley of Paris Lumber and Building Center. That's next. This is The Lead on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Stock up the fridge, pay down the bills, buy some new work clothes.
Oh, the things you could do with some extra money, right? Well, if you make less than $49,000, maybe you have some waiting for you at the IRS.
You're kidding, right?
With the Earned Income Tax Credit, some working people get as much as $5,700 back when they file their taxes and claim the credit. See if you qualify at www.irs.gov/EITC.
Tune up the car, go to night school, fix these broken glasses, start a vegetable garden.
You can stop
now.
I'd
fix my computer. I'd upgrade it.
I'm Guy Raz, the weekend host of All Things Considered. Our show isn't simply a recap of the news. We explore different angles on the day's stories, going beyond the usual headlines. When you listen, you'll discover something you didn't know, maybe hear a perspective that might surprise you. Expect to know more every Saturday and Sunday on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Starts at 4 p.m. weekends on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Welcome back to The Lead on your station, 88.9 KETR. It was 30 years ago this week that a deadly tornado swept through the Red River Valley of northeast Texas, killing one in Fannin County and 10 others in Lamar County. Among the incredible stories of survival come from Kyle McCarley and his father Bob, owners of Paris Lumber and Building Center, who I had a chance to speak with earlier this week. Think back to that day, April 2nd, 1982. Did it start off as a typical day, serving customers and whatnot?
Scott, it started off as a typical day, but I noticed when I came back from lunch that I'd never been in a tornado before, but when I got out of the car to walk into the building, I noticed that it was the weather was really unusual. It was real still, and it was rather real humid and sticky and still. And I remember remarking to someone, this looks like tornado weather, but little did I know, the tornado actually got here about 4 o'clock.
Were you monitoring any media outlets at that time, or was it all surprise when it came?
It wasn't a total surprise. You know, the media outlets weren't reporting storms as much, and we didn't have a warning system in Paris at that time. But we got a phone call from Honey Grove from an employee's spouse, who said a tornado had just gone through Honey Grove or north of town and was headed towards Paris. So we were watching the horizon and saw the tornado coming. It came, it was a blue sky. There wasn't a cloud in the sky but one little cloud. And from that small cloud, the tornado came out of the back end of it.
Well, as it's approaching, are you thinking in your mind, okay, what is our plan for this? Did you have a plan in mind or any kind of severe weather plan ahead of that storm that day?
You mean plan for our business, for the safety of our people?
Correct.
Yes, we always, when we built the company, it was a unique situation. I happened to be in the hospital with some kind of a problem, I forget what it was now, and my wife took over the construction for a few days, and about that time the builder reached the point to where they had to build our vault, which normally stores our papers and things that you have to keep so many of.
Mm-hmm.
And she had been in the Dallas tornado in 1957. It had gone through the building where she worked, so she knew something about tornadoes in Texas. And she asked them to reinforce the walls extra strong, which the contractor said, are you sure that Bob's going to approve this? She said, do it. That's what I want. So they did it. And as it turned out, fortunately, that's probably what saved our lives. We did have the plan, and we activated it when we knew it was coming by paging through our intercom system for everyone to come to the vault area, that there was a tornado on the ground, and all the people did. And we had some visitors from off the highway out in front of us, and they came in, and we crowded a bunch of people in there, and it got real cozy and tight in there, but no one complained of being uncomfortable.
What was that feeling like just being inside this vault that obviously has no windows, you have no idea what's taking place around it, but you're hearing these sounds? What is that feeling like?
Well, it was a real eerie feeling. We got the door closed, and soon after that, I was standing against the door, and I could hear, sounded like paper shuffling, and I thought, well, everybody was asking, what's going on? I said, well, I can hear some papers. Maybe it's blown out the front windows, and about that time, the lights went off in the vault when we lost the power there, and the wind started sucking out around the edges, and my ears popped, and they popped, and they popped, and then they popped a lot, and then everything went quiet. But during that time, you could hear a lot of prayers in a lot of different forms.
Did you have confidence in the structural integrity of that vault?
We were sure praying it was competent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and we didn't really doubt it, but then at that time, it was our major choice of safety. In same reaction that Kyle had there when I heard what I described several times as what sounded like people throwing pea gravel, a little light-sized gravel up on a metal roof, tinkle, 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 like, and that's all I could hear. But I thought my ears were going to turn wrong side out. Yeah, the vacuum pull on them was very strong, and to this day, I attribute that to my hard of hearing situation. Mm. But anyhow, we got out of it all right. It was a little crowded in there, but people were very cooperative.
Okay,
Kyle said we had a pretty good prayer service in there.
Wow, I bet. How long were you actually in the vault then?
My wife said she counted the time, and it counted just a little over a minute it took for that to happen.
Wow, okay.
Many years to plan and build and all, and then knocked it down in 1 minute.
Everything.
Everything.
What was it like? Describe that a little more for us as you opened that vault.
Well, as we opened the vault, of course, we had suspended ceiling like most businesses and things, and you could see sky straight out through the roof. The roof was gone. What was left of the suspended ceiling, most of the tile was sucked out. Some of the grid was there. And you could actually see the tail end of the tornado as it went on east.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And we kind of picked our way. There was two ways. There was a side door and a back door. And the first way we tried to get out, with all the walls down, we weren't able to gain access to the outside. In the meantime, there was still some electricity in the building, and the wires hanging down over our heads were arcing back and forth, and electricity popping. It was pretty scary. Where we did find exit was out the side door, and it ended up where we all got on our hands and knees and crawled out through an opening. And as we were helping each other out, a fire truck pulls up out there, and he warns us, "Don't go in there. It's dangerous." We told him we're not going in, we're coming out. And it was just, he couldn't believe that anybody survived it.
You know, I know that ahead of any type of severe weather, there's always a concern for life and property. That goes without saying. But when you open those doors, when you realize what's happened, how grateful are you that you're actually still standing?
You can't imagine how grateful you are, but it changes all your priorities. And it brings you down to the fact that, you know, life and limb and the health of you and your family is what's most important, and things like lumberyard and your home, it's just, you know, you're glad to still be alive so you can start again.
I understand a couple of neighbors perished in this tornado right next to you, right?
Yes, there was a trailer park just north of us, and the tornado path got us both, and a lady and her little daughter perished in the trailer.
Oh. Now, there were about 1,000 people left homeless over in Paris, I believe the figures show, from this storm. Others were killed as well. How many of these people did you actually know?
I think approximately 9 or 11. I can't remember. I think 11 ultimately died, maybe 9 that day, and hundreds were injured.
Mm-hmm.
And scores of homes and businesses destroyed.
as far as people that were put out of their homes, we knew a lot of people. As far as people who actually perished, I didn't actually know any of those people who actually died.
I understand that one of your signs from your business actually ended up all the way in Arkansas.
Well, that's the story we heard, yeah.
You never saw it, though.
I saw it in Arkansas. And there's one thing you learn about tornadoes. Nothing surprises you when people tell you things they've seen or what had happened. It's true. Maybe 99 times out of 100, it's true. We saw big beams twisted like spaghetti. We saw holes in great big thick pieces of steel that a man with a blowtorch would have to spend hours trying to cut a hole through that size. But 1 minute time, it did it.
Wow. And at the same time, the girls' decorations on their desks and little flowers in windows weren't moved at all.
Is that right?
So it's real funny what it leaves and what it takes.
I'm sure the people in the Dallas area today could tell you some of the same stories. It is amazing the things that it can do and will not do.
Well, I imagine 30 years ago, you were thinking about that date just yesterday.
When the tornadoes came through. In Dallas happened 25, the 1957 one, happened 25 years before this one that hit us 30 years ago. At the same time, the amazing thing about that one in Dallas and this one that hit us, they were the same time of day, the same day of the week, and the same day of the same month.
Oh, boy.
And yeah, and this one that came yesterday was awfully close to the same thing that had hit us. I don't know. We might have had to call it quits. The Lord was sending too much of a message.
Well, tell me something. How has that experience 30 years ago kind of shaped the reaction that you have to any severe weather that comes through the region, whether it be yesterday or some of the stuff that's happened in the 30 years up until this week?
Every morning when I'm getting ready to come to work, I'm watching the Weather Channel and watching the weather forecast. Today, with the advent of computers, we turn it on to the radar screens and watch the storms coming through, because we do know that they can hit at any time.
Yeah, it changes your perspective. That's for true. That's true. The weather prior to that didn't bother me much, and when wife and I went to lunch that day and coming back, we saw what appeared to be a large cloud over in the west, and she said, "Oh, that looked like a tornado." My smart remark was, "Well, what will be, will be." I don't think I'll ever utter that again, because just a little while after that, we went down. So it will teach you to respect the power that's up there.
So take us through the cleanup process, if you would. I'm assuming there's a new, or that vault still remains.
Yes, the vault's still in the same place. The lumberyard is still pretty much the same building. We did buy a different brand of building. The same people that built the lumberyard came back to us, Harrison and Walker, and they wanted to sell us this top brand building. And I think Dad told them, said, "Well, we've already seen that it'll blow away in a storm. What have you got that's a little less money?" So, yeah, we were able to move a couple of doors that we were unhappy with where they ended up, but it is the same building now. We did business here every day without a roof. They pulled this building off the top of us, and put the new building on top of us while we were here doing business.
Well, take us through, because we hear all these great stories after devastation can just wreak havoc on a town, a community. How was the effort collectively after the tornado, just being able to get back to work the next day and live your lives?
Well, immediately following that, the people, we were all in a state of shock, of course. Everyone is after a tornado hits them. And the people wandered and took care of their own personal needs to be sure their families were all right, their homes and what have you. Then they started drifting back in, and we, as quickly as we could, we organized and got our people together, and we set up our own perimeter guards that night with our people to protect our property from looting. Immediately the next day at daybreak, we put a temporary fence around it, and our people went to work buying materials, and our suppliers were good to us, and our local people that didn't get hit cooperated by loaning us equipment to use, and so everyone pitched in. It's an amazing test of human nature, and you see so many people rise to the occasion. Nobody asked all these questions about who's going to pay me or what's going to happen. Just what can I do becomes the question of the day.
Gotcha.
And it was wonderful to see people work like that. Our people worked hard, and all the people in the town just pitched in and we came back. So that's what they're doing in Dallas today, I expect.
Yes. Well, Bob and Kyle McCarley with Paris Lumber and Building Center, I certainly appreciate you taking the time and reliving that story, as I'm sure you've done for countless individuals. One final thing I want to ask you before we let you go. Having been in that experience, what advice do you give to others that are maybe lackadaisical when it comes to severe weather preparation?
I would say to be prepared. You need to go through a plan of preparedness with your family and with the people at work. And it can come in an instant and without notice. And you have to move fast and you have to carry out your plan. And then as soon as it's over, walk outside and look around. And if you're not hurt and your place is not hurt, look to see where you can lend a hand.
Well, it was a pleasure speaking with both of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Scott. We appreciate it.
The father-son tandem of Kyle and Bob McCarley, owners of Paris Lumber and Building Center, reliving their survival story of April 2nd, 1982, when a deadly tornado came through Paris. We are seeking your financial support this week as part of our spring pledge drive on your station. Make that donation now at 800-882-5387. That's 800-882-KETR or KETR.org. Become a member of this great public radio station. Let us know you appreciate programs and interviews on The Lead and throughout our program lineup on your station. When we come back, we have our Friday feature for you. Stay with us.
I'm Terry Hendricks, and I wanted to let you know about a great way to support your station. My album, Cry Till You Laugh, and its companion book, The Part That Ain't Art, are both being offered as thank you gifts for a donation to KETR. Your contribution is what keeps programs like Notably Texan on the air, and it ensures that independent artists such as myself have an outlet for our music to be heard. Please visit KETR.org, click Support This Station, and check out the thank you gift section, where you'll find my CD and book. Thanks for doing your part to keep great public radio alive and well in Northeast Texas.
Welcome back to The Lead. It's now time for our Friday feature. There is an organization growing a pedestrian trail out of Paris. We sent Justin Vitz to find out more about them and their trail.
If you've been to Paris, then maybe you've seen the almost 6-mile trail that runs through it and to Reno. That's a pretty long trail, but it's actually part of a planned 130-mile trail that would run from Farmersville all the way to New Boston. I spoke with Earl Erickson, who is the coordinator of the Friends of the Trail, about who they are and what they're doing with the Trail de Paris.
We are an advocate group under the umbrella of the Greater Paris Development Foundation. And the Greater Paris Development Foundation is a 501c3 organization under the umbrella of the Lamar County Chamber of Commerce. We're an advocacy group that works in conjunction with the Greater Paris Development Foundation to, raise funds to build the trail and promote the trail and educate people about the trail.
The Trail de Paris is a rail-banked trail, which means, as Earl describes it,
essentially, to build the trail on it, you don't have to pay any money. The railroad still owns it, and it's protected by the National Trails Act, the Surface Transportation Board, and the adjacent landowners cannot ever acquire that property because the railroad still owns it.
Because of the nature of rail banking, it is possible that the railroad company that owns the land, Union Pacific in this case, could reacquire the land for train usage. But Mr. Erickson doesn't seem to think that this occurrence is at all likely.
They're real estate people. They told me that the likelihood is very remote because of the fact that this particular railroad corridor goes through 19 rural towns. And there's just not enough population to support a fast-track railroad. So there's always that possibility, but the likelihood is very remote.
To find out how the trail affects the people of the communities, I went to the trail and stopped some trailgoers to get their opinion.
We love the trail. It's absolutely awesome. We walk roughly 5 or 6 miles on it every day.
So what do you think the trail has done for your community?
I guess you could say it gave us a safe place to walk, get a little exercise, because you don't have to worry about cars or nothing like that.
And what's your favorite thing about this trail?
That it's paved.
That's paved.
You know, you get on trails that got rocks and it's kind of a pain in the butt. This one's paved, and it's just real nice. You feel like you're out in the middle of nowhere, like you have privacy, but, you know, town, civilization is just right there. So I like it a lot.
And finally, I asked Earl what people in the communities can do to help the Trail to Paris.
You can be an advocacy for our governmental officials and people like that to try to find funding to complete this trail. And then we also have a website right now on the Trail to Paris where you can sign up and become a supporter. I mean, we welcome, you know, money and things like that. There's no question about that, but it's mainly an advocacy support.
The website is traildeparis.org. That's traildeparis.org. For 88.9 KETR News, I'm Justin Vitz.
Thanks, Justin. Our Friday feature airs each Friday during the lead at 10 a.m., and again at 4:45 p.m. during All Things Considered on your station. And if you have a story that would be best told as part of our feature, we'd love to hear from you. Send your ideas to scott@ketr.org. That's scott@ketr.org. We'll take a break and wrap things up after this on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Hi, I'm Rick Howard.
And I'm Stan the Man Kratchman,
your host for Big Band Stage Door Canteen.
Inviting you to join us each week for the finest big band music with notable artists such as Nat King Cole, Ella Fitzgerald, Frank Sinatra, Michael Bublé, Helen Forrest, and much, much more.
So join us for Big Band Stage Door Canteen each Monday night at 11 on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Welcome back to The Lead. It's now time to check out the events calendar for Northeast Texas. A final week of Easter activities in our region and the annual Easter egg hunt over at Cooper Lake State Park, the South Sulphur Unit. That's in Sulphur Springs. It takes place Saturday. It's from 1:30 until 2:30 that afternoon, and it's for children ages 1 to 10 years. Over 1,500 candy-filled eggs will be up for grabs. There'll be two categories, ages 1 through 5 and ages 6 through 10. So that's at the South Sulphur Unit of Cooper Lake State Park, located at 1690 FM 3505. That's 1690 FM 3505. And turning to the A&M Commerce Campus for activities early next week, the Small Business Entrepreneur Conference is at the Sam Rayburn Student Center on Tuesday. It's their first such conference, and will address economic development and entrepreneurship and the importance of regionalism in economic recovery and progress. That's from 9 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. on Tuesday. And a fundraiser for Hunt Regional's One for All Relay for Life team is taking place next Thursday at Hunt Regional Medical Center in Greenville. It's from 6:30 until 9 o'clock that evening. It features Dr. Matt Koger for live music, as well as Grin and Barrett, musicians you've heard on this very station. A reminder that each one of these events and others is always found at our website, ketr.org/events, and we strongly encourage you post your own event and we'll read it on the air. We know there are a lot of other events taking place in our region, and more participation at those events is as simple as clicking the Submit Event link on our website and sending that to us, and again, we'll read it on the air. That will do it for today's installment of The Lead. I want to thank my guests, Kyle and Bob McCarley of Paris Lumber and Building Center, who told the incredible story of survival during one of the deadliest and most destructive storms to hit the region, which occurred 30 years ago this past Monday. And we hope you enjoyed our Friday feature from Justin Vitz, who was in Lamar County for another reason, to inform you about the Trail to Paris and the organization's hopes for the future of pedestrian traffic in Northeast Texas. We're back same time next Friday at 10 a.m., and our show re-airs at 9 a.m. on Saturdays. And you can hear archives of this show at our website, ketr.org. This show isn't possible without listener support. Please make that contribution
and let us know you appreciate programs like The Lead and Texas Matters, which is coming up next. The number to call, 800-882-5387. That's 800-882-KETR or KETR.org. This has been The Lead, the exclusive news magazine of Northeast Texas, on your station, 88.9 KETR. I'm your host, Scott Harvey. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.